Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests appear via the Shell Penzo Performance Line. Ethan Strauss, who covers the Warriors for The Athletic and covers the NBA for The Athletic, will join us in just a moment. Mama Momo's here. We'll talk to Ethan about his new book called The Victory Machine, about how the NBA basically has changed in a number of ways due to the max contract and how it affected the Warriors' particular dynasty. So we'll get to Ethan here in just a sec. In the interim, we will have Evan Leonard. Don't forget, he is our senior shout-out coming up at 11:15 from UCI men's basketball, the Anteaters, the Irvinians, as we like to call them. By the way, Mama, did you know that during that tournament a couple years ago when they advanced, John and I both picked the Irvinians. I just want the record to show
too.
That Mason...
I picked him.
That, there you go. Mason did not. He was on the air during Purgatory and said he went against the Irvinians and then they won. So I still want the record to show he was anti-Irvinian at that time.
Yeah, you should definitely show that. I definitely picked them as like one of the upset picks, and they were good at that. But also, I've covered the Big West. That was like one of my first beats. That I covered Cal State Northridge when I was at the LA Daily News. So I would cover the Big West, and I would go to the Big West tournament every year. And Irvine was always really good. So,
yeah.
They got a good program there.
So we will have one of the Irvinians in our senior shout out coming up in a bit.
Nice.
It's in Kirkchin at 11:30. But Ethan Strauss now joins us. The book is The Victory Machine. It's really about a number of things, but about basically how the max contract changed the game and how it affected the Warriors dynasty. Ethan, thanks for hanging out, man. So let me ask you Let me start here. Kevin Durant, more annoyed with you and your line of questioning and all your friends in the media, or the Steph Curry fans? Which one was more annoying to him?
I think it was maybe in his view it was all one and the same, even though I would disagree. Maybe today it's me, but before that maybe somebody else. But I don't know. You know, it's been a while since he was on the Warriors. He's had a lot of time to think. He's been in this unusual circumstance of recovering from the injury. He might have realized some things. His perspective might be changed. We shall see.
Ethan, I know you've been working on this book for a while, that you've chronicled the Warriors, you know, sort of from scratch, right? Before they were good, and then since they were good. Just in reading what you've written over the years, even before this book, I've always felt that there was a Jeter and A-Rod dynamic to Steph Curry and Kevin Durant, right? And the excerpt that you released really hit home on that, right? Of like, you know, the resentment towards Steph. And specifically, it was because you had written a column after they had a game against Houston where Durant kind of went real quiet during the game. And then in the fourth quarter, he took seven shots and Steph took one, right? How big a deal was that for the Warriors? Were they really calling plays just to keep Durant happy during the year?
I think to a certain extent they were trying to adjust the offense. And here's the thing, though, because we even frame it as keeping Kevin happy, but Kevin's also a very smart basketball player.
Right.
And so he has his own ideas of what works. And I think in his view, making me happy might be making the right decision. And these guys, they're very accomplished, and they have their own right to their own opinion. And it reminds me of Draymond, for instance. I think Draymond often expresses himself in a way that's explosive and it spills over, but he's rarely wrong. You know, with Draymond, the problem isn't so much that he's wrong. It's usually when he goes too far, it's how he goes about it. So it's hard, especially from our perspective, where it's difficult to know what the right basketball decision is. But I think that he might have viewed keeping him happy as this is the right way to play, and the Warriors might have viewed it as keeping happy.
Right.
Ethan Strauss, The Victory Machine is the book. Make sure you check it out. How did Steph deal with all of this? Like, clearly we saw how Durant dealt with a lot of it, or Draymond, but how did Steph deal with some of this stuff?
I think Steph was always somewhat beleaguered, but with a positive spin. I mean, I know Ramona knows this, having been around him. He's one of the most positive thinking kind of people, optimists, right? Everybody else within the Warriors organization who was on the team playing knew that Kevin was gone, but Steph still, I think, held out some hope and, you know, showed up to pitch him famously. So I think that Steph was always looking on the bright side and seeing what could be salvaged. And he's had some practice. You know, we forget, as Ramona said, there's a ground floor to this. Steph came in when the Warriors were an absolute disaster, and I think that gives him the perspective to weather certain storms.
Well, you know, it was interesting. When Durant joined the Warriors, there was a sort of back and forth with him and Steph, where Steph did a little of the recruiting. Like, Steph kind of had to let him know, you know, this is my team, but I want you to be a part of it. You're the best player in the game, right? And he, you know, they had a little text exchange where it was, you know, Steph kind of said, like, you know, I'll be happy if you get your own, you know, if you get your MVP and you get your finals MVP, right? Like, you know, but I remember very distinctly, Steph had a pride about him and saying, like, you know, if we didn't get Durant, as the leader of this team, I, you know, I got to feel like we would have been okay. Like we could have kept winning without him. Right. And I think it showed Steph's sense of just security in himself and the team. Whereas I don't know that Kevin ever really had that sense of security in his place on the team. And I think, like, just going back on it, like, there were two dynamics. One, Kevin was never going to be Steph. And two, even winning a championship and back-to-back finals MVPs was not enough to squash any concerns or any issues that people had about Kevin saying, like, you only won because you joined the Warriors. And I think maybe, like, he just got to this, you know, just reading it back, like, he got to this point where it was like nothing he could do in Golden State was ever going to be enough to change his reputation.
Yeah, exactly. And it reminds me of how Lebatar will say, guys say, I just want to win, I just want to win. That's not true. They want to be the reason for winning. They don't just want to win. They want to be perceived as the reason that the winning happened. And this was such a strange situation with Kevin joining a 73-win team. It was almost decadent. You had such a great thing that you said offhandedly in Chase Center, I thought, just a few months ago, that the old arena, Oracle, it was too small for them.
Yeah.
In this new place with the lottery team, it's way too big for them.
Yeah.
But in general, it just felt like the league was too small for them. Like, this was too much. It was too much. The natural order had been disrupted. And when that happens, it's hard for any individual person on that team to get credit.
Ethan Strauss, The Victor Machine is the name of the book. Make sure you check it out. It's basically a crossroads of how player empowerment and the max contract played a role in changing the game, and of course the Warriors dynasty. So let's do that part of it now, the aforementioned player empowerment, because there's always a LeBron angle to all of this. And
of
and you know, whether it's max contracts and the lockout of 2011, and LeBron going back to Cleveland, really putting the pressure particularly on Dan Gilbert on these year-to-year contracts, like, how did he change the way that it all worked moving forward, basically?
I think it's underrated. It was a social contagion in a way. When LeBron made that momentous move to Miami, and then in addition to it, he made the move to come back to Cleveland, I think that that was the signal to other superstars that this is what a superstar does. They look to LeBron. He's the lead guy. So now you saw a bunch of players in the league who might have been worried about burning certain bridges in certain cities or how that might be perceived, just being more open to it. And I think it's really propelled this moment of player empowerment, and not just superstars, but all stars having this leverage over their teams. And they have even more of it because the max contract creates a situation where they're underpaid, and it's essentially a trade of money for power, where they have more power over the owners because the owners are paying them less money than they would make on the open market. And that's just the situation we're in currently.
Ethan, I can't talk about Durant's last season or think about last season, his last season with the Warriors, without mentioning the feud with Draymond and how quickly that relationship changed from, you know, Draymond being the lead recruiter of Kevin to maybe one of the bigger reasons he goes out the door. What I haven't read any excerpts on that yet. I don't know if that's been released, but what's the biggest takeaway in the book about this?
Oh, we might have a bit of a split on this, because I view that moment as a moment where I view that moment in the Clippers game as a moment that was put the season into a precarious place. But I think the die was always cast that Kevin was leaving. Like, yeah. I think he was going to go, you know, even if Draymond had been as nice as possible to him. But it did create a situation for the team to deal with. And I think Kerr said something really interesting, that sometimes the team's chemistry is like a balloon, and maybe this was the moment it popped. Now, it wasn't. Mm. They managed to somehow get everybody on the same page and probably win the championship, but for the injuries. But, yeah, that was a moment that I think was more of the symptom than the particular disease of that team, of showing that, you know, they were tired, KD was on his way out, and Draymond was getting frustrated.
Yeah, I agree with you that moment was just a symptom, because what Draymond was basically saying is, you know, we all know you're leaving and we won without you. So if you think that you should be getting all these shots, you know, just remember we won before you got here too, right? But I think there was a frustration in that locker room at the I don't think Kevin kept that close to the vest that he was leaving, right? No. That had gotten around the league. He had told a lot of people. He had told guys on the Warriors at the time, you know, like it was sort of an open secret, but nobody, you know, you didn't quite believe it until he really did it. But it was I think it was even more of an open secret he was leaving Golden State than he was leaving Oklahoma back in the day. I think the Oklahoma decision was harder.
Oklahoma.
So I think Draymond go ahead.
No, the Oklahoma decision was still shocking in a way. Even if you heard rumblings, it was still shocking when he finally chose, you know, one of the two New York teams. I don't think people were knocking me over with a feather. I'm shocked. Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah.
Ethan, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ramon.
I was going to say, why do you think he said he was leaving? When was that? Was it the year before they had won the championship?
Oh, I couldn't hear that. Why do you think what?
Why do you think he decided he was leaving? Like, why and when did he decide he was leaving?
I think the problem started the season before, you know, on the run up to the last championship they won, where he was starting to drift in a way. And they were concerned. I know Zach Lowe has reported on the dinner that Kerr had with him to try to keep him on the same page. But I think a lot of it was, it just wasn't fulfilling anymore. He wasn't getting the credit. It didn't seem worth it. He wasn't happy overall. And I think that's pretty much it, where in the end, at a certain point, the Warriors were getting more from Kevin Durant than Kevin Durant was getting from the Warriors. And that's why the split happened.
Ethan Strauss, The Victory Machine is the name of the book. Let me ask you one last question on the way out here that has to do with the future of the Warriors. Let's just say, for all intents and purposes, eventually we get back to basketball, whether it's this year or next or whenever. How do you feel this Warriors team could perform moving forward? Like, should they be considered a contender with the group they would have at the age that they are?
Ooh, it's so, I mean, look, I'm going to take some stupid nuance route and say that it all depends on what moves they make, and if they add another veteran with the TPE, and if they really nail the draft pick, or if they, I'll say this, I think the core as it's constituted, without anything else added, I think they come up short. But if they can add another piece or two, if they can, let's say, package the picks for a really good veteran piece in addition to another one, or if the pick just, I don't know, surprises all of us and contributes early, then they're in the mix. I mean, they've got a lot of experience, and Clay certainly has had a lot of rest. I mean, they're all going to have a lot of rest because of this particular situation. So I think it's going to be about what happens additionally. But, you know, Steve Kerr said something in one of the last games before the season was canceled, that we're never going to be what we were, that we're never going to be that. And it's obvious, but it was surprising that he said it. And so there is a finality there. They're not going to be the prohibitive favorites, not for a while.
There he is, Ethan Strauss, The Victory Machine. Get the book, buy the book, read the book, download the book, do everything you got to do to get the damn book. It's The Victory Machine. Ethan Strauss of The Athletic joining us here. Hey, man, thanks for taking the time. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Both of you are awesome at your jobs. Love talking with you.
Same here, brother. Be good. There he is, Ethan Strauss. All right, coming up next, Momo, you and I will be talking to Evan Leonard, our senior shout-out, senior guard of UC Irvine. He joins us for a senior shout-out next. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN. Mama Momo, Ramona Shelburne, riding shotgun with us today. Thankful to have her aboard. It's all presented by Progressive Insurance, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's time for our senior shout out. Evan Leonard, UCI men's basketball, joins us here. Evan, thank you for taking the time, man. Congratulations on a great career. I'm sorry it finished short, but I want to say this. Ramona and I both picked you guys for that upset against Kansas State a couple years ago in our bracket. So we wanted to thank you for making us look smart in our bracket competition a couple years ago. What was that like, that win?
Oh, man, that was so cool, you know, to be able to, you know, be in the NCAA tournament last year was such a cool experience. You know, I just tried to take in every moment, and a lot of people don't know. We actually played Kansas State 2 years ago, my sophomore year. And, you know, we played them at Kansas State. And we kind of really didn't have too much of a chance in that game. So to be able to see how much better we got, you know, from within a year was really cool.
Hey, so what are you doing now? Are you still taking online classes? Are you wrapped with school? Like, what's your day like?
Yeah, you know, obviously not doing too much. I'm still at school, you know, just working out, just trying to stay busy, trying to stay active. They changed our classes to online. So, I got two more classes left. So it's cool to, you know, be almost done with this and, you know, just be going to the next chapter pretty much.
What was it like when you got the word about the way things were going to unfold?
So our tournament was supposed to start that Thursday, I think March 12th, and, you know, the NBA had canceled or postponed their season that Wednesday, the day before our tournament. So, I feel like we just had kind of a good idea, you know, going into our tournament, which was happening the day after that. It might be canceled. So we had a good idea, you know, of what was going on, and I just feel like, you know, the officials that take care of us in the NCAA, I feel like they had our best interest at heart. So, you know, just got to follow the rules.
When it all finished up, I mean, I'm just flashing on my own senior year in college and how big of a countdown there was, right? Like, you know, I got to have the sort of nostalgic feelings. It's my last time doing this. It's my last time playing here, playing there. You guys didn't get any of that. You didn't get a countdown. You didn't get, you know, this is the last time of any of that. There's not even time for nostalgia. It just ended. And I don't know how you process that, right? Like, I feel so bad for all the seniors this year. There's a part of me that's like I couldn't even process, because I think I needed that countdown. Like, have you been able to get through any of that, those emotions?
I have. I'm the type of person, you know, I'm not too emotionally invested in too many things. A lot of people who know me, they'll know that. So, you know, just speaking for myself, you know, obviously when you say things like that, you know, it causes me to look back and really, you know, get into my feelings a little bit. But, just opportunities like this, you know, what you guys are doing for us, you know, it means a lot. And, you know, it allows us to have a little platform where we can, just sit back and reflect. So I feel like a lot of little opportunities like this is really good for us.
Evan Leonard of UCI, men's basketball, senior guard, joining us here on our senior shout out on 710 ESPN. Outside of the tournament, what were some of those moments? Like, what stands out to you? You're like, man, that day was the day. Like, I felt like the best I maybe ever felt in my career.
Yeah.
There was a lot of those moments throughout my 4 years here. I would say one of the most memorable moments was our junior year, which was 2 years ago when we made the tournament. Before the season, we were able to take a overseas trip to South Korea.
Cool.
And, even the guys who were coming in that year were able to make that trip. So, I feel like that was the first moment, you know, we were able to really get close to each other. We actually played for a championship in that little tournament and ended up losing that championship to a team from Russia. So, you know, that was my first time out of the country, a lot of the guys on the team, our first time out of the country. So just moments like that, you know, it was really special for us to, you know, just be able to, you know, grind and go through adversity for the first time as a team. So I feel like, you know, moments like that helped us out a lot, you know, during the season.
I also think, like, being part of a college team, you get to have some of the best friends that you'll ever have, right? Because you travel together, you go through life together. And, like, who were some of your best friends on the team and best relationships?
Yeah, I was close to a lot of guys. Obviously, a lot of guys who were upperclassmen last year who were the seniors, like Jonathan Galloway, Elston Jones, Max Hazard, who actually made his way to Arizona this year. Those type of guys, you know, those are the guys I kind of looked up to, you know, coming in who, you know, had experience under their belt already. So just guys like that who helped me out along the way, had so much confidence in me. And, you know, I feel like guys like that is the reason why I was able to do so well here.
Evan Leonard, UCI men's basketball senior guard. You're a Cerritos kid, so, like, who did you want to emulate? Like, who was the player you look up to that you wanted to emulate your game after?
Yeah, you're saying from Cerritos or just anyone?
No, in general, like at the NBA or whoever you saw play in college or whatever.
Yeah, well, yeah, obviously, you know, being an L.A. kid, obviously growing up, Kobe Bryant, you know, he was one of the big guys for me. Obviously, you know, I couldn't really do some of the things he was doing out there, but, you know, it was cool to watch the memories that he brought us. Obviously now, LeBron James, you know, the better guys in the league who are, you know, the top two, top three. And then, obviously, since I'm a guard, you know, guys like Damian Lillard, I feel like I can really, you know, try to emulate my game after. So, you know, yeah, guys like that, I definitely looked up to growing up for sure.
What's next for you? You going to keep playing overseas? Is there something you're training for now?
Yeah, I'm definitely working out right now. Definitely want to fulfill a goal to become a professional basketball player. I was already able to sign with an agency out of LA already. So, yeah, you know, just excited, you know, excited to get things going. Obviously, it's still early in the process and it's all weird, you know, with the pre-draft workouts and all that type of stuff. So just excited, you know, excited to get going.
Evan Leonard, there he is, UCI men's basketball guard, senior this year. Hey, man, congratulations on a great career. Thank you for coming on. We'll be certainly keeping an eye on you moving forward and rooting for you, man.
Oh, yeah. Thank you guys for having me.
You got it. Stay safe. There he is, Evan Leonard with us here on our senior shout-out on 710 ESPN. The Irvinians, the Anteaters, Momo.
There it is. There it is. I like Irvine. I like that spot. Kobe, that was Kobe's spot, too.
It would
always work out.
Yeah. All right. Coming up next, I'm pretty sure Tim Kirkjian, people don't realize, back in the day was a baller himself. He was actually one of, you know, there's a lot of history about Tim Kirkjian being one of the baddest ballers in Bristol back in his day. Now, as he says now, George, I'm a 60 something year old man. I can't shoot the way I used to. But we can talk to him about some baseball and have some fun with him. Tim Kirkjian stops by next.
Sedano Show with you here on 710 ESPN. Ramona Shelburne hanging out with us today, riding shotgun. Always happy to have her aboard. It's all presented by Progressive Insurance, and all our guests like Tim Kirkjian appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Tim, before we get started, we were just having some fun during the break talking about our boy Dan Le Batard, who you go on the show with very regularly. And we were talking about his interview with Rex Chapman. He did the interview with Rex Chapman. Rex did it. They had an E60 on him. And they talked about how Rex used to live in his car in between his NBA career or whatnot. And the guys were joking that Dan's tone completely changed and that they called him a grief eater. you, Tim, as someone who knows him very well, would imagine that there's two things he loves, to laugh and to make sure to pounce on someone's grief. What in your historic career, right, you've covered a lot of guys. Have you ever found yourself in a situation where you're like, ooh, I probably pried a little too much into that particular conversation for this particular subject that I was interviewing? Hello, Tim?
Yeah.
Tim, you there?
Yes. Hello?
I don't think this is Tim Kirk.
Hello?
Did you call the wrong number, Greg?
Yeah, I think you called the wrong number. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Hey, what's your name, though, bud?
What is your name? Yeah. What's your name, sir? What was your name? Oh.
All right.
Yeah, that definitely wasn't Tim Kirkjian. I was like, what?
And I did this elaborate lead up. Now there's no way I can do that again. Like it's just over.
It was a really good lead up. It was good.
Oh man! And I would imagine
I put the right phone number.
And I would imagine he had like such a great story to tell. I'm sure because he always has a great story.
That was that guy's moment. I wonder if that guy who was on the line like realized he was live on the radio. That was like
he had no idea. He had no idea.
That could have been a big breakthrough star.
And you gave this huge lead up, and he's like, I don't know what this guy's talking about.
He's like, was, what?
I just thought maybe he wasn't on the line or he couldn't hear. And I was like, Tim, hello, Tim.
And he said, yeah.
And I was yeah. Like, I don't think and I'm like, that's Kirchin. Not Tim Kirchin. That's not your voice. That is no way that's Tim Kirchin. And then he got scared when you asked him that question, Momo. Like, yeah. What's your name?
He was like, nope. What's your normal wrong number protocol? Like when somebody calls you and like they're very convinced that they have the right number. Are you nice about it? Do you just be like, hey, wrong number, man? You
know? Yeah, I just like, yeah, sorry, man, you got the wrong number. Like that's just kind of the move.
Yeah, you know? And do you hang up right away or do you have a little conversation? Because sometimes they don't believe you right away. Sometimes they're like, they're like, no, man, I got the right number. This is supposed to be, you know, Joe. And I'm like, not Joe.
Well, if they persist, I will be like, listen, I've had this number for a really, really long time. So,
yeah, you're just one number off, man. Yeah. You're a little off. But I also don't want to tell them who I really am, because then what if it's like a sports fan and now they got my set?
Right. Yeah, then you're stuck there. Yeah, you know, you're talking there for a while. I will text Tim, Greg. Is that what you want me to do?
Yeah, could you please? That way we can, because he doesn't really, he responds better to you and quicker. And it looks like Laura was calling and put the wrong digit.
I see.
You want to try that again? Oh, that was fun radio.
That happened to me one other time where I actually was the one that called. It was Peter. We were calling Peter King on a show when I was at the NBC station, and he came on, and the guy was just like, hey, yeah, what's going on? He was talking to Chris Mannix, and Chris was like, this isn't Peter King. We're not talking to Peter King right now. I know Peter King, and this is not Peter King.
I just sent him the number. He just texts me, says, are we still on for 2:30? We got to tell him the story now.
Yeah, like, this is
so he's going to call in, Laura. We got to tell him this story. Like, this is fantastic. I want people – I can imagine – God, I wish that guy would have responded to you, Momo. God bless. That would have been hilarious. And then imagine Tim would have texted me. Are we still on? Hold on. No, we're talking to the fake Tim Kirchin right now. I could have told Tim to call in, and then we could have all talked to the fake Tim Kirchin at that point. Would have been fantastic radio. Good Lord. Oh, my God. By the way, while we're here, Tim Kirchin's give us the Straight Talk brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Everything for less. Only at Walmart. Tim, I got to tell you what just happened here because it's the most hilarious thing ever. So our board op, Laura, was trying to call you, and by accident, she called the wrong number. So I did this elaborate lead up as to like a story that we were talking about during the break that involved our buddy Dan Lebatard, and I asked you a specific question about if that had ever happened to you while interviewing a subject, and all of a sudden, there was dead silence.
Yeah.
And then I go, Tim, are you there? And the guy just goes, yeah. And I'm like, that doesn't sound like Tim Kirchin at all. And then Momo asked him, what's your name? And then he hung up the phone. But it would have been, it was one of the funniest things that we've ever encountered. Hashtag pandemic.
Well, sorry about all this. My phone is on the fritz for some reason. It's not ringing through properly, which is very disconcerting. But sorry about that. That should have just been me. It would have been better.
Oh, it would have. Well, what would have been hilarious is had we kept him on the line and then you would have called in and then we just could have all interviewed him at that particular point and found out about the fake Tim Kirchin. So anyway, Timmy, I hope everyone is safe and sound with you. Thank you again for joining us. Let me start here because I know we don't have a ton of time and you're very kind with your time. Clayton Kershaw Monday told Sportsnet LA that he has no interest basically in this Arizona thing. What is your sense as far as some of these star players and whether it will actually impact baseball's decision if they do get the green light to move forward?
Well, I don't think they're getting a green light on that. There are just too many roadblocks in the way. Away from your family, quarantined essentially for 4 months, that just doesn't sound very desirable or very smart, even though we have to listen to everything at this point, of course, just in case there are elements of good ideas somewhere in there. Plus, you know, it's going to be 115 degrees in Arizona in the middle of July. They can't play all the games indoors, so it's going to be really, really tricky. I talked to two players the other day, and they both said that nothing has been put forth that makes any sense so far, and that's nobody's fault. All these reports that are coming out are true. They've been discussed. They're accurate, but they're just not good enough. And eventually, we're going to have to, if we're going to play, we're going to play without fans. We're going to play in some really odd circumstances, and the players are ultimately going to have to go along with it. But are they going to like it? Probably not.
Tim, I'm wondering how antsy people are getting. You know, I mean, there's this sort of uncertainty that everyone has in the sports world, and not even just the sports world, in our whole world, like opening back up, et cetera. But baseball creatures are such a baseball players are such creatures of habit. They, you know, I was reading this Wright Thompson story today on Clayton Kershaw, and it's like, you know, the guy measures his life in 5 day increments. Like, I'm going to pitch again, and this is what I'm going to do at 6:23, and this is what I'm going to do at 6:25, and to have this uncertainty lingering out there and not being able to plan and prepare and build up like they normally would in spring training. What's that doing to guys' psyches?
Well, it's really messing them up because, and again, there are far worse things than not, you know, being able to eat at the same time as you do every other day or take ground balls at 3:17 like Wade Boggs did every day. I mean, there are a billion things more important than that. But they are indeed creatures of habit. I can't tell you how many baseball players that I've worked with after their careers are over at ESPN, and they have trouble getting around sometimes because they have a traveling secretary and they have people handling their luggage. Not that they're lazy. They're just on a certain schedule. The bus leaves at 4 o'clock, and when they don't have that kind of structure, some of them have a difficult time with it. I know I've spoken to baseball players who aren't sure what to do. Where do they go to work out? And exactly what kind of workouts are they going to be doing? Because they don't know when the games are going to start to be played again.
Tim Kirkjian hanging out with us here on the Sedano Show. Ramona Shelburne hanging out with us throughout the entire show as well. So, Tim, with Major League Baseball talking to these health officials and doing this antibody study right now, like, how did that all come about? How did Major League Baseball link up with this particular group from USC and Stanford?
Well, again, this is Major League Baseball trying to cover all its bases, get out there and play as quickly as possible, and they just saw this as one way to say, all right, let's get as many guys cleared as we can. Because here's the difference, I believe, between baseball and basketball, certainly, and maybe baseball and football also, is you can't just start playing baseball like on June the 15th, and then six guys get sick, and you say, all right, well, we're going to stop. We're going to come back in 3 weeks. It doesn't work that way. Great NBA jump shooters can take 3 weeks off and come back and make seven threes in a game. But Major League Baseball players need more time to, you know, hone their skills playing that sport. You can't hit off of somebody or no one for 3 weeks and just come back and pick it up again. It doesn't work that way. That's why baseball is looking into how can we all get tested so we all know that we're safe going in, but that's pretty impractical also.
Tim, what's the financial ramifications that are already being felt? I mean, I know, you know, the NBA season had or, you know, was in full swing, so they're really feeling it. Baseball was they're missing a spring training gate. They're missing now, I guess, the first couple weeks of the season. How bad is this starting to hurt?
Well, it's really starting to hurt, obviously, with no games because these radio TV packages on the local level are just so enormous these days. This is how teams make so much money. Mm. Then there are the teams that don't have a great local TV package, and they need fans coming into the stadium, buying concessions, parking in the parking lot in order to make things work. So that's what makes this so difficult right now, is that no money is coming in, and the whole pay structure still isn't clear exactly how everything's going to go. Mm-hmm. So it's just another question that really doesn't have an answer right now, and that's the disconcerting part.
Tim, what have you been doing during this pandemic? Give me the day in the life of Tim Kirkchin.
Well, I've written every day, starting with March the 26th. I've written my version of this date in baseball history, and I pick out something that happened on that date and write about it. So I've written every day for over 3 weeks. I've now written through May the 10th. I accompany with a video. It's called The Baseball Fix, and it's just an attempt to give our best baseball fans hopefully a little smile every day, just a little mild chuckle every day about something that I've found in baseball history that they might learn about, smile about, something like that. So frankly, I have been really, really busy. This was my idea. I brought it up. I volunteered to do it. It's been way more work than I thought it was going to be. But, you know, after I watched all the Columbo episodes, I didn't have much else to do. So I said, all right, I got to do something else here. So this is it.
What's been your favorite one so far? Favorite date in history or trip down memory lane?
Well, there have been some really dumb ones already. I do the gratuitous ones, you know, like today, Jackie Robinson is Jackie Robinson Day. So, of course, I wrote about that for today. And there's so many of them that are so obvious. May the 6th is Willie Mays' birthday. That's coming up. But the other day, I just did something on Jamie Quirk catching Dan Quisenberry for the first time. So we had a QQ battery, which was the first in Major League history. And then we had a QZ later when Quisenberry threw to Todd Zeal. So I went through all my favorite batteries in baseball history, including Abbott and Castillo, Black and Decker. So, and it's just, again, an attempt to, I've always followed those my whole life because I have nothing else to do with my life. So that was just an attempt to make people get a mild chuckle once in a while.
Tim, Ramon and I were talking about rewatching the 88 World Series. It was on ESPN yesterday, game one, and just so many things that stood out, right? Like Vin and Joe Garagiola on the call, Jose Canseco and the light that he was viewed in. I mean, he was one of the biggest stars in sports at that particular time and just everything that came with that. I don't know if you were at that particular game. I would assume maybe you were, as you kind of rewatch that, if you did, and kind of relive it, what stands out to you the most when it comes to that particular game and that particular series?
Well, I was at that game because I haven't missed a World Series game in 41 years, so I'm not missing that one, that's for sure. There was so much about that series. I mean, Gibson had no chance of playing in that game. So he's sitting in, Oral Hershiser told me the story, he's in, you know, a little back room in the clubhouse with Oral, and they're watching the game on TV, and Bob Costas accurately says there's no chance that Gibson's playing tonight. And Gibson said, all right, I'll show him. He got himself loose somehow. The word was sent to Tommy Lasorda that Gibson could give you an at-bat in the ninth inning. Then he hit a home run off of Dennis Eckersley on a backup slider, just like Mel Didier, the scout, had told him. That's what Eck likes to throw, especially when the count gets full. And after the game, I'm standing there talking to Eckersley, me and a lot of other people, and he says, well, when you give up a walk-off homer, so I say, what is a walk-off homer? And he goes, well, the guy hits a homer and everyone walks off the field. That's the first time I'd ever heard it. Maybe everyone do it, but I had never heard that before.
Huh.
So to me, the Kirk Gibson homer was also the birth of the walk-off homer.
Wow. Well, you know, Tim, the thing that I've always marveled at after that is the way Eckersley handled it, right? This is a giant meltdown. This is one of the most famous home runs in all of history, and he's the guy who threw it, and he's one of the most, you know, respected relief pitchers of all time, and that he's kind of gotten to be friends with Gibson over the years, right? Like he's owned that pitch, and he's owned that his moment on the other side of history. What's their relationship like? How did they kind of deal with that together?
Yeah, Eck is like the coolest guy of all time, by the way. So okay. Only he could, and he's in the Hall of Fame, and he had two seasons in which he had more saves than base runners allowed. Think about that for a second. He is very confident in what he did. He also owns that's one of the biggest homers in baseball history, and he gave it up. And he told me not long ago, he said, I hate this time of year. This was October. He goes, because every time I turn on the TV, I have to watch that thing again. That's just how Eckersley handles everything. But, yeah, I don't think he and Gibson are best friends by any means. Right. But like any other situation, he recognizes this was really good for the game. This is a historic moment, and he has to take part in it some way or another.
Tim Kirkjian, ESPN MLB insider, one of the kindest men you'll ever meet. Thank you so much, Tim, for the time. Appreciate it. And I'm sorry that you didn't get to interview the fake Tim Kirkjian with Ramona and I earlier.
Yeah, that would have really been great.
See you, Tim. Stay safe.
See you guys.
There he is, Tim Kirkjian with us here. All right, final segment coming up. Momo, I want to we want to talk about Jackie Robinson Day a little bit, you and I. Also, I want to ask you a couple of quick NBA questions on the way out. We got one more segment to go. We're back in less than 3 minutes. Sedano with Momo, 710 ESPN. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN. Mama Momo hanging out here. One more segment to go. If you missed our interviews today with Tim Kirkjian, even the fake Tim Kirkjian, who we called by accident. Check out the interview on demand section in the Sedano Show podcast on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, wherever you find your podcasts. Brought to you by Capital One Quicksilver Card, earning unlimited 1.5% cash back on every purchase everywhere. What's in your wallet? So, Momo, I love Tim Kirkjian. Where would you rank him on the nicest people at ESPN? He's got to be close to being at the top.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know him as well as I wish I did, right? I mean, I just have watched him for years, and I've met him a couple times personally. He's always been really, really nice. I don't know. I think he's right up there with, like, I find Doris Burke to be extremely nice. I think she's
Tony
really
Reale,
cool.
Right?
Tony,
he's a one seed.
Tony Reale, he's a one seed. He's just a fantastic human being. Like, he just cares about the world and all the right things, right?
Yeah.
So I would say Tony right up there. Who else would we put up at the top? Let's think.
I mean, you know who's climbing
Holly
the charts?
Holly Rowe's pretty great.
Yeah, she's great. You know who's climbing the charts pretty fast? He hasn't been here very long. Ariel Helwani. He's the most polite person I've ever come across in my entire life.
Yeah,
I feel
and he has such a joy for getting to do NBA games. He's so excited every time. He's like, oh my God, I just interviewed Kawhi.
Yeah. Right. He's climbing those charts. He's in that conversation for sure. But Tim Kirkjian, Tony Reale, one seeds for sure.
Here's what I'll say
about
him. I'll tell you what I'd say about Tim Kirkjian. This is what I love about him. He loves baseball. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
He's not just a historian of the game. He geeks out on Quisenberry throwing to the catcher with the letter Q and the Q to Z. And then, you know, Abbott and Castillo as the pitcher. And I mean, he loves the trivia and the history and the fun stories and like, I feel like we live in this world now where people don't take enough time to appreciate things like that, those fun little quirky things about sports and baseball and history and all that. And like, that's what I grew up on. I love that about baseball. Mm-hmm. Like that was, that's what people love about the game. That's what you're supposed to do when you go to a game and you sit there in the stands and eat a hot dog and have peanuts. You're just supposed to talk about all that stuff. And
how about the walk-off home run story?
Yeah, that was great. You know? Yeah. I mean, just like that, that's what Vin Scully loved. That's what, you know, all those little things where it just kind of makes time slow down a little bit. You just appreciate the way that guy went about that at bat and then the small stuff. We get so focused in the media on storylines and narrative and news and, you know, just the end result. Like it's just so nice to watch a whole game. Like, wasn't that nice yesterday to just to watch a game, you know, and to watch like the even one, you know, the outcome for, and you know what's going to happen. It was just fun to just watch that stuff. And I think that's what I love about Tim Kirkjian is that you can hear the love of baseball coming through every word.
Yeah. And make sure you check out what he wrote about Jackie Robinson Day today, which look, it's a shame that there's no baseball today, right? Like because of that. And just to acknowledge the courageousness of Jackie Robinson and the excellence of Jackie Robinson on a day like today. Real quick before we let you go, and we all leave, actually, because we all have to go. at noon, the show's over, no matter what we want. So Adam Silver is amongst a group of commissioners that's meeting with the president on a call. It's not the first time that this is happening, but Mark Cuban, Robert Kraft, and Jerry Jones as owners will be part of this call. Like, I would love to be a fly on the wall in that conversation. Good Lord, just with all those people on that particular call and trying to restart the economy and sports.
I have a little insight into how the last call went, okay?
Okay. Well, we've got 2 minutes, so go.
Yeah. I think a lot of it is just kind of checking in. I think a lot of it is just kind of taking people's temperature, checking in. It's been sort of described, you know, and what I heard is like, it was almost like a going around just talking to, hey, what are you guys doing in the NFL? What are you guys doing in baseball? What are you guys, it was like that. So I don't know if you're going to see anything really substantive happen on this kind of call. But I think it's more a function of sports has such a platform in this world, in this universe, and everybody wants to see sports come back. So there's this feeling that if you continue to elevate sports in the national discussion, it will, it helps with the politics of this, right? Because as I mentioned before, you know, baseball has that antibody study that they've all agreed to participate in, 10,000 people. But there's going to be some people who hear that and say, well, why does baseball get all those antibody tests? I want to know if I had it, right? And we don't have tests available to everyone. So I think the more you get sports front and center and talking about that, it helps with the politics of it. And that's a big impediment. Yeah.
And the answer to that is this, just so people know, is funding. Yeah. The normal funding that something like that would receive would make that study take a year. The fact that Major League Baseball is funding it, will now mean that will take a couple of weeks to get some answers, which is an important thing at this particular juncture. So, all right, we are done here. Thanks to Evan Leonard, our senior shout out. Thanks to Tim Kirkchen. Thanks to Ethan Strauss. And Mama Momo, thank you for hanging out with us today.
You guys got a little cameo, Daniel screaming in the background. That was fun, right?
We love it. We love it. All right, thanks to Greg and Laura and you guys for tuning in too. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 10. See ya.